Hey, Pastor, if you've been meaning to get healthy by achieving better physical fitness and losing some weight, but you just haven't been able to crack the code, check out my story at coachingforpastors.org. Welcome to episode 341 of the 200 Churches podcast.
For us, it came to a point that I felt that we were stuck in multiple areas of church life. Like, I used to be able to see my way through. I used to be able to kind of have the wisdom or the strategy to manage it. But 4 years ago, I just didn't see it. I just felt like, okay, we're stuck in different areas. So in terms of growth, we're hitting a ceiling. In terms of finances, spiritually, there were some things that I felt like, hey, I need to find out what it is. And if you're in the midst of it, it's just sometimes difficult to see what's going on. So I needed to have an outside voice, an outside perspective.
Welcome to the 200 Churches podcast. We're passionate about providing ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches. Now here are two guys who are definitely better together. Friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
Boy, do we have a great episode for you today. We have Ian Borkent on the podcast today. He is a pastor in the Netherlands and a friend of John Finkelde. John from Perth, Australia, coaches and consults with pastors and churches, and he's connected with Ian. He's been coaching and consulting at his church and with his staff for the past 4 years, and Ian is soon to come on as a Grow a Healthy Church consultant for Europe. And so he's going to be working with John, teaming up with him. And John and I connected the other day, and he said, hey, it'd be great if you have Ian on the podcast. So we jumped right on that, and Ian is on the podcast for today. So we want to get right to my conversation with Ian Borkent from the Netherlands. Ian Borkent, welcome to the 200 Churches podcast. I'm excited to get to know you.
Thank you. Likewise.
All right. So I got an email from our friend John Finkelde from Perth, Australia. And he said there's this guy named Ian that he's gotten to know and he's been working with, and that I should have him on the podcast. So, hey, if John Finkelde says I should have you, then I need to have you on the podcast, right?
That's great. I love John. John is a great friend. Yeah, he let me know about your podcast. I listened to an episode this afternoon. It was great to hear.
Well, you've only got 339 more.
I know. I saw it. I was impressed. You've built up a whole library.
Yeah. We've been had the pleasure of doing it for a little while now, and you right now, you're the latest guest. So you're the hottest item on the 200 Churches podcast right now. So thank you for joining us. And just, Ian, tell me a little bit about your wife and kids, about your family.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. My wife, her name is Jedidja, which is actually in the Bible called Jedidiah. In Dutch, it's Jedidja. And we have been married now for 11 years, and we have three beautiful children, Noah, David, and Ava, and they're aged 9, 7, and 4. And we live in Arnhem in the Netherlands.
In which province would that be?
That will be in the eastern province called Gelderland, and Arnhem is the capital of Gelderland. You might have heard about the movie A Bridge Too Far, which is about Operation Market Garden in September 1944. That happened in our city. That Operation Market Garden, they tried to secure the bridges, but unfortunately didn't work out. And lots of lives were lost here in this city.
So you're only going back, did you say, to World War II?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole lot more history where you live than where Johnny and I live. And Johnny's not able to join us today. He's on parent duty this weekend.
It's important.
So you and I are going to have to hold down the fort. Yes. Yes. As I looked at the website, then you started ministry at your church before you got married?
In the year we got married, actually. I think it was a wedding gift from our pastors or something.
That's interesting. So tell me how you took the helm, how you took over control of the church there.
We were living in Amsterdam at the time. So we were part of C3 Church in Amsterdam. And I was part of the staff team in Amsterdam as well. But my wife, she is from the city where we currently pastor, and she was part of the church here from the start. And they were looking at handing on the leadership of the church. They is our pastors in Amsterdam. Yeah, they apparently had an eye on us for us to take it on. And as soon as we announced, hey, we're going to get married, they called us into the office and they said, hey,
okay,
guys, we've been thinking about you taking on the leadership of our church campus in Arnhem. And so would you be willing to take it on? So we said, wow, that's awesome. Let's think about it. Are we allowed to go on a honeymoon first? And that was allowed. So, so then basically we hit the ground running. It's like 2 months or so after we got married, we became the campus pastors of the church. And then later on, the church became an independent church or standalone church. And then we became the senior pastors or lead pastors of the church.
Were you nervous about becoming campus pastors, or were you young enough to, you weren't smart enough to be nervous yet? You were really excited.
Yeah, I was definitely excited. I already had a feeling for quite a few years and a calling from God that I knew I would be pastoring a church one day, but I hadn't really gone around announcing that, because I thought if God is calling me, then he'll make it happen. He'll open the door. So in fact, it was a great confirmation of a sense that I already had. And my wife was totally thrilled because she's from here. So yeah, she was really excited to be pastoring a church in the area that she's from and where her family is from.
Yeah. So tell us, what did the church look like when you guys started your ministry there?
Yeah. Well, it was a campus of our church in Amsterdam. So it was an evening service time on Sunday night. So basically it was very, like a student kind of church. So lots of young people, hardly any families, hardly any children.
Hmm.
And often people refer to us as a youth church because we didn't really have families with children. But I always told them, look, wait long enough and all these young people will end up getting married and have children.
Yeah.
Which is exactly where we are today. So when we started, we had about, I think, 60 people, and the average age was like 24 or something.
Interesting. And where are you at today?
Today...
You kind of jump from the beginning to the end here.
Yeah, no, sure. Today, we are definitely more of a family church. We have lots of young adults, lots of youth and children. We have about 450 members now, and we're in two locations. So we planted a location out of our Arnhem location. We went south to another city, and actually we moved the service time in Arnhem to the morning a few years ago, and that has helped us become more of a family oriented church, obviously. And we now have our own evening service in the other location.
And do you preach at both of those? You go to both?
Yeah, I go to both at the moment. I don't preach every week because we have a great team of different people who can preach. But I'm definitely present at both locations. But the goal is to have our location in Nijmegen, which is the city south of us, also move to the morning eventually.
Okay. And is the goal, like your current church, for that church plant to become its own self-sufficient independent church?
Maybe, not necessarily, because we love the synergy of having multiple locations. It really works.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have, of course, a central location, central systems, central leadership and oversight, and that makes it work. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do it. And as long as it works, we'll keep it that way.
So you've got others who speak, and how often do you speak? Do you speak like half the time or more or less?
Yeah. When I started, I think it would be about 80%, but now it would be around 45%, slightly less than half.
Really? Really? And the people that do speak, are they paid by the church or are they volunteers?
They are. Most of them are volunteers. Only one person is paid on staff. He is on staff for 50%.
Okay. So you developed these folks, you develop relationships and did some training and discover their giftedness and then just put them to work.
Definitely. Yes, it's great. It's just great to have different voices, different ages, men, women speaking and ministering. And yes, so over the years, I've really had a desire to hear less of myself and more of others. I think it's healthy as well. and to develop gifts in others. And so, yeah, as I got to know people, as I got to know their character and their gifting, then I gave them a go, you know, and maybe not necessarily do a whole sermon at first.
Yeah.
But some people, we just started with like mini messages or offering messages or leading a service. And then through process of feedback and just helping them hone on their skill of preaching, being able to develop people, and now have a team of about 11 preachers, I think.
11. Wow. So they also don't preach a lot, but but consistently.
That's right. Yeah. So because most of them are like, how do you say it? I think the word is lay pastors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, they have a full-time job. And so for them to prepare a message, they have to do that in evening hours. And so, yeah, so it's great to have more people, because then the people who do preach, they don't have to preach every second week or so, but maybe it's every couple of months.
So tell me this, in the United States, in a typical church, the pastor is usually the one who is expected to do the preaching and teaching. And
right.
If he or she gave away half of that, people could maybe start scratching their heads. Like if it just happened overnight and the pastor proclaimed that, okay, made the announcement that they're only going to be preaching half the time,
right.
I think the typical response from people would be, oh, they're not really doing their job. So
right.
How does that work in your culture?
Yeah, well, I think we've gradually grown towards that. It's not that I stood up one day and said, hey, people, I'm now going to preach only half of what I preached before.
Yeah.
So it's been gradually happening. But of course, it's also about building a culture of releasing people left, right, and center. So our church is really used to a culture of releasing people into different gifts. And we have a vision of having 5 locations in the next couple of years. So people know, well, if we're going to have 5 locations, we need 5 worship directors. We need 5 children's directors. We need different preachers. So we need to reciprocate the giftings and to multiply gifts in people, because we're not a one-man show. And they know that it's not going to be healthy for any pastor to do everything. So I think because we've taught that to the church, they see that it's part of a bigger vision. Plus also, they really appreciate hearing different voices. You know, I have a certain preaching style, a certain way of delivering a message which people love. But if they would only hear my voice, I think it's good, like having a meal. You don't eat the same meal every day. You need a variety of ingredients. And I think people have come to appreciate having a different meal, different insights, different angles, different way of delivery. And so for us, it's been proven to work really well.
Excellent. Boy, you got me thinking, Ian. You got a whole bunch of us thinking right now that, you know, when you're preaching all the time, I've always felt this, and yet I still have a ways to go to develop a team that is doing, you know, even 2/3 or even 1/3 of the preaching, so
right.
that I would be down to 2/3. You know, it'd be interesting for me to go back and look. I don't really know what percent I do. If I had to guess, I would guess about 75%, maybe 70%.
Yeah.
But I think you're absolutely right about it being healthier. So how do you and your wife minister together? What things do you bring uniquely, and what things does she bring to the church uniquely for her?
Yeah. Well, she's not on staff at the church. And actually, in fact, she has her own psychology practice that she works in for 3 days a week.
Okay.
So, yeah, so she would have less time available, but she definitely does minister regularly. I think it's about once every 3 months that she preaches. Plus, she set up a women's ministry a few years ago, where she preaches at regularly. And we had our women's conference, our first ever women's conference, just last week. So that's definitely, yeah, I think a thing for her to speak into. And she has a more of a prophetic voice. And I'm more of a Bible person, so I would be more of a person trying to dig out what's in the Bible and to help people apply that in their lives. And she is more of a person who speaks prophetically into the season of the church, that where we're at and where we're heading.
Interesting. So on your website, it lists you as pastors, plural.
That's right, yeah.
And is that just a cultural thing, that they see the husband and the wife both as pastors of the church?
Well, I don't think so necessarily. It's definitely not by accident that we put it there. It has a purpose, because we are both pastoring the church and we're both leading the church. So, for example, both of us are leading a team of leaders, which we call our connect group. You can also call it a small group or whatever, of our core team, basically coming together regularly. And so for the women in the church, it's really important that they know that my wife is there for them and speaks into their world, is hanging out with them, spending time with them. So in effect, she's got three jobs. You know, she's the mother of our children, has her own psychology practice, and is the pastor of the church. So it's a full life.
Yeah, well, and I think that in the United States, it's very similar, with the exception that the woman generally wouldn't be called a pastor.
Okay.
But she would be called the pastor's wife.
Right.
But given all the same responsibilities, she just wouldn't get the recognition, wouldn't get paid, and probably wouldn't be thanked. But other than that, she's doing great. So, Ian, you and your wife and maybe your staff have connected with John Finkelde. Tell me what was going on in your leadership and in your pastoring just before you decided to work with John. What was going on that caused you to reach out to him?
Yeah, well, I think this was about 4 years ago. We were in an area of church life where we've never been before. Well, in effect, we've always been in an area of church life that you come to a point and like, I've never been here. You know what I mean? It's like when you start out, you're growing and things are changing and you're always going into uncharted territory. And you're like, well, I've never been here before. What do I do now? And so for us, it came to a point that I felt that we were stuck in multiple areas of church life. And like, I used to be able to see my way through. I used to be able to kind of have the wisdom or the strategy to manage it. But 4 years ago, I just didn't see it. I just felt like, okay, we're stuck in different areas. So in terms of growth, we're hitting a ceiling. In terms of finances, spiritually, there were some things that I felt like, hey, I need to find out what it is. And if you're in the midst of it, it's just sometimes difficult to see what's going on. So I needed to have an outside voice, an outside perspective.
Yeah.
Someone coming with a bird's eye view and just coming in, you know, looking at us as leaders, at our church, and just giving us some perspective. So then I heard about John Finkelde. I heard him speak as well at a conference in Malaysia. And the things he shared there, they really struck a bell within me. And I felt a connection. And so I reached out to him, and he was able to come over.
And since then, in the past 4 years, how often do you interact with him?
Well, every month, yeah.
Okay. So for over 40 months then?
That's right. Yeah, it's awesome. It's it's really turned into more of a friendship rather than just a coaching relationship. But he's just a great coach, a person who has spent time with us, like physically in Arnhem, looking at the church and with us as pastors. But then also we are on Skype every month, just talking, chatting through stuff and continuing the conversation. And that's really helped us, because there's always some things that you need some insight in. And because he knows us now, he knows our team, he knows our setting, it's very easy for him to speak into that.
So he's like an adjunct staff member.
Almost.
Who is helping.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is either really good. This is really good or really bad. You know, it could be really good in that you like him, and so you keep him around. Or it could be really bad that he can't help you, and he keeps trying over and over every month, and you're just never getting to that spot where you don't need him anymore.
Well, I think leaders are learners, so I would always need outside voices. And I really appreciate things that he shares and the insights he has. And he's someone who's just has done a few more yards, run a few more miles And I really appreciate that.
So I think we first had John on our podcast, I'm going to guess it was 5 years ago. And it's just been a delight to know him and to get to know him and to have that friendship. I can't really guess how many times he's been on. I can guess. I'd only be guessing. I'd say maybe between 6 and 10.
I looked it up. The answer is 10. 10 episodes with John Finkelde.
Times he's been on our podcast, maybe more than that.
Awesome.
Give me something that he did for you, something like specific where, you know, you weren't realizing it or you didn't know it or you were going in a different direction and he gave you some input, some coaching, and it turned things around.
Yeah. Well, I think one area was volunteer engagement. So he looked at two things when he came in, which one was connect groups and the other thing was volunteerism, how many people are involved in the life of the church. And I thought, we're not doing so well with connect groups. We can do better, but we're doing really well with the amount of volunteers that we have. But actually, he gave me the insight that it was the other way around, because we had 70% of our people going to connect groups, but we only had 50% of people involved in the team, which I thought that's amazing. At that time, I think we had 250 members or so. And I thought, wow, 50%, you know, that's pretty good. But he really gave me the insight. He said, look, it will never increase as the church grows bigger. So when you will be a church of 400, your volunteer engagement will be less than 50%. It might drop to 40%. When you want to be a church of 1,000, it will drop again to 30%, but that's not enough to be a church of 1,000. You need to have, right now, he said, you need to have at least 70%, maybe 75% of people involved if you want to grow. If you want to keep growing as a church and reach more people, you need to get more people involved. Also, if you want people to grow, because it's good for them to be involved. So that was a really big insight for us. And he also gave us some strategies in how to make that happen. For example, appointing a volunteer coordinator. So we've done that. And now we're at 73% involvement. And we are a larger church now than we were then. So that's definitely to do with John's advice.
That's really interesting, Ian. 73% involvement with 450 people when you were only at 50% with 250 people.
Yeah, that's right.
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you, when you started to increase volunteer involvement, you likely had so many slots that you needed to fill at the time, and maybe, you know, most of them were filled. Certainly, you could have filled them all and not reached 70%. Did you have to create new opportunities for people to serve?
Yes and no, because we are the kind of church that's always extending things. We're always starting new things. So in that sense, we don't have to create things for volunteers. It's almost the other way around. We just create things and then we need the volunteers. But on the other end, we were definitely lacking in some areas. For example, kids department, we are getting more and more children, and we don't want the children's volunteers to be serving every Sunday. We want them to be able to be in the church service as well with their own families and not having to serve in kids' church every single Sunday. So those were some major areas that we got some growth in. And that was good for the team, for their health.
Yeah, and what were some things that John did with your volunteer coordinator or that he kind of guided you in that allowed you to gain more volunteers? Were there like one or two specific things that really worked?
Yes. Well, first of all, it was having a volunteer coordinator because we didn't have one.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was the main thing, appointing a person who's excited about getting people involved and then having the right system in place for that person to really map out the database of our church and see who is doing what. So basically, John then gives 5 levels of involvement, all starting with a letter D. So you have the do-nothings, then you got the doers, the delegators, the designers, and the dreamers. Those are five levels of involvement. And so we mapped out every single person in our database and we said, look, are they a dreamer, a designer, a delegator, a doer, or a do nothing? And so once we had that, we could then look at the people who are not involved and seeing how can we get them involved, which was basically often just a conversation, picking up the phone and calling them, meeting them, and just focusing on them. And also getting them involved in something they enjoy and not going for a roster position, but just really focusing on the person and what they like doing. Of course, with the attitude of servanthood there and doing what's needed, but also doing what's needed in a spot that they really excel in or where they can flourish. And so all these things have helped us get people not only doing things right, but doing the right things.
So you had to find just the right person to be the volunteer coordinator.
Yeah, I guess, that's definitely a God thing of him providing that person, because it's difficult at first when you have to find someone for a position you've never had. It's like, how do you find that person? But someone put up their hand, I think he put up his hand and said, look, I think that's something for me. And we said, okay, cool, well, let's have a go. And he's still doing that, in fact, and doing really well at it.
What does this guy do in his real life, right, in his 9-to-5 job?
Yeah, he runs two companies, so he's a pretty busy guy.
Yes, so you find the busy people and you give them more work because they know how to get it done.
Exactly, yes.
That's so interesting. So where's John taking you guys at this point, or what is your vision? What's the next thing for C3 Church there in your town?
Yeah, well, it would be just to keep developing people and developing leaders. As pastors, of course, you're always looking after the people, but you also want to help develop them in their skills, in their giftings, in discovering their giftings. And so, yeah, for us, it's definitely a focus on getting the right people in the right place and looking after them in the process. So we've started some leadership development groups, my wife and I, and also some of our other leaders in the church have started leadership development groups for up-and-coming leaders. And yeah, so John is also helping us with that, how to do that, how to run such a group. And also we're this year looking at acquiring a building because we've been saving up for quite some years. And yeah, of course, that's something I've never done before. So it's helpful to have some advice on that as well.
Where have you been meeting?
We're meeting in a high school auditorium, which has been working really well because that high school has a lot of classrooms, which is perfect for our kids' programs. And the auditorium is geared with lighting equipment and audio equipment. It's been really working well. But of course, it's not our own building. So it's a lot of setup and packed down, especially for special conferences or events or midweek events. It's quite challenging for the team to make that happen. So, yeah, I think once we have our own building, we can do so much more.
Yeah, you will. You will be able to do so much more. It's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes down, because there are also their own challenges.
Of course.
You've got a certain amount of energy when you meet off like in a different place.
Yes.
With all the setup and the tear down.
True.
Or I think you said pack down. But once you get your own building and you don't have to do all that, where does all that energy go?
Yeah, well,
Does it just dissipate into the air, you know? Or does it get redirected? Do people say they put their feet up and say, oh, finally, it's over?
Yeah. Well, that's a very good thing you're saying there, because sometimes you can get the tendency I hear that around the place. You hear statements like, well, once we have our own building, as if the building will do the work or something, or as if the building will clean itself.
Yeah.
But we've always want to preempt that and say, hey, look, guys, we have our own building. That means we need to do our own cleaning. That means the building won't vacuum itself. It won't clean its own toilets. So let's be aware of that. Plus, we're always launching out things. That's our culture. We're always stepping out into things. So I think once we have our own building, we'll find another location or something to dig into.
So, Ian, the 200 Churches podcast, our mission has always been to provide ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches. Mm-hmm. And when you and your wife started in your location, you said there were 60 people there. Mm-hmm. And that was 12 years ago. And you said that 4 years ago you had 250, which means in 7 years you went from 60 people to 250 people. Mm-hmm. For all that time, you were a 200 church. In fact, we say a 200 church is a church of around 200, give or take 100 or two, which pretty much puts them under 400. And so we know that 95% of churches are under 500. What were some of the challenges for you as the church grew? Were there any times, any moments when you said, okay, at this size, it's different, and this is a real challenge?
Yeah. I think crossing that 200 to 250 mark, that was the most challenging time. Because before the 200 mark, you kind of know everyone. You do a lot. You have less staffing, so more falls onto you as a pastor. So you don't have the systems in place, or you don't have the replication, the multiplication in place that's necessary to be able to be a 400 member church. That is, I think, in a lot of ways, that's a challenge, because personally, for me as a leader, I needed to learn to let go and let others do things, even though they would do them in different ways than I might do them. And so for the church, it was getting used to, hey, it's not Pastor Ian that we can call for everything, or that is doing a lot of these things, but we actually have more pastors now, and we have more leaders. And that was, in a lot of ways, the most challenging point, I think, the 200 to 250. That's why I think it was necessary to have someone like John come in to help us see our way through.
So he came in when you were at 250?
Yes, yeah.
Wow, so he really has walked with you through some pretty good growth, especially because you are the Netherlands. I guess church attendance is sparse there. It's not, there's not common.
Yeah, it's been declining, I think, in the traditional churches mostly. But then on the other hand, you see more modern type churches. They're growing in number, and on Sunday there's still more people in church in our country than there are in a soccer stadium. Hmm. You know, I mean, in all the soccer stadiums across the country, if you all add them up, there's still more people in the church on a Sunday in our country, which is good.
You know, shockingly, that would be true in America too.
Okay.
Because there's not too many people watching soccer in America on a Sunday.
Right.
Now, football,
yes,
that would be another story.
Yeah, right.
Right, football. So, Ian, as we wrap this up, first of all, you've been really helpful and challenging. And this idea of the percent of people involved in serving.
Right.
I think that those percentages are way higher than what a typical American pastor would have in his or her church.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting. So it's been very helpful, but could you give a word? We call it the parting shot. Give a parting shot to the small church pastor, uh-huh, who is still struggling, you know, is kind of discouraged.
Right.
May feel like they're just not making enough progress and they might be stuck. What would you say to that pastor?
Right. Well, I would say it's always good to remember the call. Like, as long as you know that you're called, then you're in the right place, doing the right thing. For me, I focused too much on who was not there at first. I was focusing on what we weren't and who wasn't there. And I had to really make a shift in my mind in focusing on who is there. Let's just focus on the people that I have. And because it's always in your house, it's not elsewhere, it's not somewhere else, it's always, the people are always in your house. And as long as you focus on the people that God has given you, then you're doing the right thing, and God will bless that and honor that. And besides that, I think it's always good to reach out to other pastors and not do it by yourself. And that's why I love this kind of a podcast, because it helps pastors connect and hear other pastors' stories. Because we're not meant to be doing life alone. It's not good for men to be alone, God said, and it's not good for pastors to go it alone. And so, yes, I encourage every small church pastor to focus on who's in their house and reach out to others, not do it by themselves.
And Ian, you have kind of teamed up with John Finkelde at growahealthychurch.com. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it has helped us so much. And I kind of like all the things around church growth, but especially growing a healthy church, that I've said, hey, look, I would love to be able to help people, pastors and churches in Europe and the UK with this. John is based in Perth in Australia, which is beautiful, but a little bit far away. So I've connected with John and said, hey, look, maybe we can team up. And so from March onwards, I'll be a Grow a Healthy Church consultant. And it's such an honor for me that John has trained me to be doing that for the UK and Europe.
That is awesome. That's great. And so what you need to do, Ian, is you need to share this episode with as many English-speaking small church pastors in Europe as possible and grow our listenership there. We do have listeners on every continent all around the world, but they tend to have to be English-speaking, right?
So yes.
We have very few in South America. We do have some, but you know, not that many, because it's a different the language barrier. We've had our podcast listened to in 75% of the countries around the world.
Wow.
At this point, I think about 150 countries our podcast has gotten into, which is really great. And now, of course, we do have this whole library of episodes that where we talk about so many different things, and we've tried to make them somewhat timeless. They use the term evergreen,
right?
So that, you know, we're not talking about current events, but we're talking about the life and ministry of pastors and what we deal with and what we go through and how we shepherd our people. So, Ian, thank you very much. We appreciate it, and I hope this is not the last time we have you on the podcast.
It's a pleasure, and I would love to share something again. Thank you also as well, Jeff.
There you have it, Pastor Ian from the Netherlands. A lot of good practical stuff there. Hey, I am really intrigued by the level and the percentage of ministry involvement that his people have, and how he has taken lay people and turned them into lay pastors, having them preach and shepherd the people and lead ministries. My buddy Rob from Philadelphia, he's been doing the same thing. They've been actually ordaining some of the people in their church into ministry and really utilizing lay people to do serious ministry. So I'm intrigued by all of this. We've got a lot of volunteers in our church, but if I had to guess, I bet, and I'd just be guessing, I bet we don't have 70% of our people involved in ministry, but you can bet I am going to do the work to check that out and to try to increase that, because I do want my church to grow. I want us to reach people in our community that are sitting in their living rooms without hope right now. So Pastor Ian from the Netherlands, and I can't pronounce the town or the province that he's from, but thank you so much for helping us and for encouraging me and all of our listeners who pastor small, medium, and large churches, pastors all. Hey, we'll be back with you next week for another episode of the 200 Churches Podcast.
My name is Angela, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, you should subscribe at 200churches.com and to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You know it. We'll be back with another amazing and encouraging episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love His church.
All right. Perfect. How do you say your last name?
My last name is Borkent. Ian Borkent.
Ian Borkent.
Yes, that's right.
So is the emphasis on the last syllable, Borkent?
I think it would be on the first, actually, in Dutch.
Borkent.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Perfect. So let's see, where was I headed? So I edit all this out later. Where was I headed with that? I asked if you...
Yeah, about if the other location, if it was going to be a right. standalone, like independent church.
I remember
in
now.
The future.